The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Yeah! Punchies. There were punchies tonight, guys.
I'm wasting time while I type out a tweet.
Who are these gentlemen on the graphic? Right, I have no idea who these gentlemen are.
I don't know. Yes, they were not the people who did the punchies.
This was a card. It was a card heading into it. It ended up being some fights. But as you can see, the two faces that you see on the screen right now, we're not the last two men inside the octagon. It was not what? Derek Lewis and Sergey Spivak. As a matter of fact, the last two men inside the octagon were the two men that were supposed to compete in a fight that Alexander K. Lee wouldn't even have called a co-main event between Iwan Kuchalaba and Kennedy Enzichukwu. In the end, Kennedy Enzichukwu finishes Iwan Kuchalaba in the second round, and he closes the show. Big spot. Gets himself a main event, and if you watch the card, you understand what happened. If you didn't watch the card, you're probably thinking, what the hell happened? This is not a thing. I'm not used to this. Apparently, the rumor mill was flooding all card long. I had heard some rumblings, could not confirm, but then Brendan Fitzgerald in the broadcast confirmed with just before the final prelim fight that the fight between Derek Lewis and Sergey Spivak was off. Non-COVID related, non-weight cutting related. Derek Lewis essentially just got sick. Apparently he was hospitalized this morning, came back, wanted a fight, and in the end, everybody just were on the same page. Live to fight another day, man. No need to go in there and fight sick. So the fight was scratched. We got into Chukwu versus Kuchalaba. We got 11 total fights. This is a weird card, and we're going to do something a little bit different on the post-fight show, and I'll let you know what that is in a matter of seconds. But I am Mike Heck. Jed Meshew will join us once again.
Punchies! It turns out, Mike, that the penultimate fight was actually the ultimate fight all along. Who knew? Honestly, it's the most fitting possible outcome. It's the most fitting outcome for this freaking fight card.
Yes, and then the first fight on the main card ended up being Charles Johnson and Zalgas, and there was like 811 Zalgas Dumagulov, and there was 937 fouls, not 1 point taken, and it went to a controversial split decision. And in classic Zalgas Dumagulov fashion, he loses a split decision that he probably should have won. He is the Courtney Casey of the men's flyweight division. Ooh, just on the wrong end of all of these split decisions.
Yeah, and then he retired.
And then he retired.
Because you know, you gotta, if you're gonna leave the sport, you want to go out on a high note, and that fight was a high note.
I felt like I aged 2 years just watching that one fight. So I feel like I'm 51 years old after that.
I feel like that fight took 25 minutes for a 15 minute fight because there was a stoppage every 4 seconds for a foul.
What do you think? If you actually measured the actual time between beginning and end, was it longer than an average 25 minute fight with all the fouls? I'm sure.
Dude, it had to be.
Had to feel that way.
I gotta say, I thought during this fight, I was like, "Here's a way we could make this a much dumber but more fun sport. What if we adopt? You know, the World Cup's come up. What if we just adopt football's very stupid rules about injury time? Right? I've gotten into this argument a million times with my friends, and they all think that I'm an asshole, but they've yet to be able to convey it to me properly. They don't stop the clock and then restart the clock because time is a construct in terms of football. They just have a second clock that's an injury clock or whatever, and like one shady individual keeps that and nobody knows what it is. We should do that for this. Instead of giving the fighter 5 minutes, we just keep the round rolling right on through, and then Herb Dean or whoever's in the middle is keeping a second stoppage. So then we never know when the round is actually going to end, and it would make things much more chaotic and stupid, which is the only way to improve this very, very bad fight card we just had.
Yeah, and people say open scoring is the answer. No, a second clock with the referee holding the stopwatch, that's beautiful.
I would like less transparency because transparency doesn't make this sport better. Let's be very clear.
Yes.
I just think it's interesting that this card, like for the magnitude of this card, they still receive and as well deserved 50K bonuses. But then last week we had a sold out Madison Square Garden with a gate of like $6 billion and they still get the same performance bonus. It's just a very weird concept the UFC does with performance bonuses. I just think that's odd.
Yeah, it's all very dumb.
Yeah.
You know what this card could have used? Some finish bonuses to incentivize some of these people to get their opponents out of the friggin' cage. Jeez.
Well, some of the fighters did that, and maybe they will be compensated with some bonus money. I wonder who these bonuses winners are going to be. I think it's probably pretty obvious. I don't know if we're getting a fight of the night.
I think we nailed it. I think we nailed it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We don't get the main event because of Derek Lewis, but if you took that one off, my next one would have been Kennedy and the same thing. I think we killed it.
Yes, although Natalia Silva is probably getting a bonus for a spinning kick to the face and throat.
Ooh. Illegal. Kicked her in the throat. That is a band. Cannot make throat attacks. That is not
follow-up. The follow-up shot that just.
I think you're probably right. So what we're gonna do? We'll wait for the bonuses and we'll tell you what they are. But what we're gonna do, since there are literally no storylines coming out of this card, it's just dudes and gals fighting each other. I think the biggest staked victory. And it wasn't even that big for the actual winner. Was Jennifer Maia, if we're being honest. But there were some decent performances. I thought Vanessa Demopoulos fought well. Natalia Silva's an absolute gangster. Jack Della Maddalena, give him somebody closer to the top 15. Muslim Salikov just changes personalities with one spinning kick. And Waldo Cortez Acosta just continues to get these tough guys to 15-minute decisions. And he remains undefeated. He's 9-0. So we are going to, it's like we did the people's pre-fight show. We're going to do the people's post-fight show. We're going to let you all determine what we're going to talk about for the next 20 to 30 minutes. That's what we're going to do.
Let the people control the means of production.
Before we go to the questions, what did you guys think of the two stoppages from let's talk about the Andre Fiajo stoppage. Was that a perfect stoppage or was that late or early? What did
nailed
you think?
It spot on.
I thought it was perfect.
I don't think most refs make that stoppage either, which makes it like even better because I think most refs let that keep going. And you're talking to a man who very much did not want that fight to be stopped. Perfect stoppage, like exactly the right time.
Cool. And
that was what? That was Chris Tione, right?
Yeah, Chris Tione.
Shockingly, Chris Tione nailed it. You know, so
nailed it.
No. What's shocking is that the no nonsense Keith Peterson allowed a lot of nonsense to occur in Johnson Zumagulov because he's no nonsense.
And kind of in the main event too, because he probably let that go on a few hairs too long, if we're being honest.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty comfortable.
What did you think about the Ian Kutalaba stoppage? Was that a late stoppage?
That was a little long. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but I thought it could have been stopped sooner.
I don't know if you saw Ari Helwani. I'm on kind of the same boat that Ari Helwani is with the stoppage from last week. We both think it was early. I understand the debate, you know, but we were kind of wondering how does Kutalaba get that much leeway in this type of main event, and then Izzy doesn't. I know every stoppage is different, you know, it's different circumstances, but it's just this weird thing of MMA. I just never still quite understand when fights get stopped, you know. Because I did think the Kutalaba stoppage was fine, but definitely on the late side if you're going to choose. But
there's a range, like, right? Like, everything's a spectrum. There's a range of when a fight is like an okay stoppage, being perfectly timed to like maybe a hair early but okay, to a little bit late but fine. Like, as long as you're not egregious either way, that's really all I care about. Like,
yeah,
if you're in the range of acceptable, that's fine.
Yeah, I still contend that there's no such thing as an early stoppage from strikes in MMA. It's just not. It just they're unicorns. They just don't really exist. I can't think of one that's 95% agreed upon. Like, that was an early stoppage from strikes.
So the Kutalaba, the first Kutalaba Magomed Ankalaev fight is like the only one I can think of.
And that was on purpose. He was trying to trick his opponent. Yeah, that was a rope-a-dope, but he actually tricked the ref.
That was just like a very weird situation. But you're right. Like, that's the only one I could think that's like, that was way, way too early. Way too early.
Someone mentioned, actually, I think it was Kaposter from Twitter. I threw this question out earlier last week, that the Vasquez Carmouche title fight, which is why they're rematching it, actually, was an early stoppage. And I even saw a lot of people say that was a fine stoppage. And I thought watching it live, it was a horrible stoppage, too. But
I remember thinking live it was better than I thought on replay, but that it's still probably within the bounds of acceptable.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's still in the bounds. So that's what I mean. There's no such thing as an early stoppage. All right. I just want to get that off my chest. To the questions.
And as you're pulling up the questions, props to Kennedy and Chichuku, who just wanted to get the hell out of town, because he could have taken the low blow time, and he's just like, nah, dude, I got this guy hurt. Let's get after it. Well done, Kennedy.
Agreed.
Also, just the nicest man, too. Like, that's not going to go anywhere as far as promotion, but just thanking everybody all the way down to the janitors and the travel agents.
I love that.
And Jesus and shouting out his mom. Just what a great guy.
My favorite thing you said was Bisbee asked him what he wants next, and he said something to the effect of, whoever the UFC gives me, I will take it and I will cherish it forever.
I didn't watch his post fight.
Amazing! So great. I will take whatever opponent they give me and I will cherish it forever. It's the best.
Just, I love everybody. Everybody's great. You know, just happy to be here. Sorry that I'm a slow learner was like one of his things. Like, I knew it would take me a while. Like, the UFC bet on me when I wasn't very good. I knew it would take me a while to get good because I'm a slow learner. And now we're here. It's great. Thanks, guys. Just the nicest fella.
Do you think he got the rub being the main event? I'm trying to be positive, you know. Just,
I mean,
did he make the most of the opportunity?
He did as best as he could. I mean, he got a good finish and was some level of charming in his post-fight speech. But it's also a card that I doubt a ton of people are paying attention to.
No matter what he would have done,
he now gets to say that he is main evented a UFC event, though. Like, that's not nothing.
Oh, and talk about. And Walter Cortez-Acosta co-main evented.
that happens a lot. They put Cal Borrello in the co-main event coming off Contender Series. Like, co-main event, penultimate fights are easy.
Borrello's first two fights in the UFC were co-main events.
Yeah. But now he looks like he's at least fun.
All right.
Kennedy and Sichuku we always talk about the importance of doing the thing. That was Kennedy and Shichuku's version of doing the thing, and I thought he nailed it. Yeah. Well done.
Very good.
All right, here we go. Oops, wrong screen.
What do we got? Kennedy couldn't cut a promo if his life depended on it. It's not his thing. It's not his vibe. I loved it. It's not going to get him.
Honestly, it was great. hot take. I loved his substantially more than I gave any craps about buddy from last week, Moicano's. I didn't give a shit about Moicano's. I know I'm the only person who was like, nothing makes me more upset than people asking for money in post fights. Like it infuriates me, and not that they're wrong for doing it, but like that this is just a part of our lives because the UFC won't pay people money.
Yeah, like, but he didn't go write the check 50K. It was Moicano wants money. I think talking in the third person is the key for Moicano. It's like as long as they're themselves.
That usually doesn't endear me to people either, Casey.
Yeah. Should. But if he cut that on a fight night on like an ESPN, if he cut that promo on ESPN Plus or on pay-per-view, it doesn't have the same impact as it had being on ESPN News and cutting that exact same promo and then just having to bleep him out over and over and over again. To me, it was just hilarious.
It is much funnier when you can't hear what he's saying. That is truly, truly that part of it is amusing.
All right.
Is Vanessa Demopoulos going to be a problem at 115? She's 3-0 at 115. Do you use the word problem as a word to describe Vanessa Demopoulos as a fighter, Jed Mishu?
No. Good for her. I didn't think she was going to win this fight. So strong work from her. But I don't. She's 34, which is really late to come into the game like at this level or whatever. And her wins are Jinyu Frey and Maria Oliveira, and who else does she beat? Oh, Savannah Gomez Juarez. Like, we're not talking about a string of hitters that she's defeated. Her performance has been good. She's showing personality. She's gonna, you know, carve out a little space in this experiment for her, and that's good. But that's it. Like, that's all it is, and that's all it need be. Everybody doesn't have to make a title run.
Yeah, she's overachieving. So good for her.
Yeah, she's getting better. She's props to these words don't come out of my mouth too often, but props to Henry Cejudo and team at Fight Ready. They've her game
Henry Cejudo's a very good coach. He's a very good coach.
Yeah.
Have also entirely not really related to much of anything. Have you all ever looked at Vanessa Demopoulos' photo on Tapology?
No, should I?
It's Hold just on. Not the same person.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
This does not appear to be the same human being.
Yeah, she worse. Yeah, yeah. Oh,
I just pulled her up to like remind myself of who she beat, and I was like, this is jarring and different. Okay.
She did have another day job before she went full time to being a fighter, and she's talked about that. So if you want to look into it, do your research, go for it. But actually, I thought Maria Oliveira, only being 25, I still think – what is her record in the UFC?
She has a better future than – she's 13-6 now, I think.
Yeah. I still see Maria Oliveira actually having a longer career in the UFC. I like her fighting style. And she a lot – I think a super strong third round looked good for her. But yeah.
Plus, she's 25, so she's got plenty of time. Yeah, Demopoulos lost to Lupe Godinez and Corey McKenna and stuff. Like, she ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she is a full-time fighter now. She was not for those fights.
Yeah. So, give her that.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about this gentleman.
All we want to talk about is Jack Della and the silkiest hands at welterweights. Jack Della, can I just say something? I know I'm not the only one that says this, and I don't want to dump on Kennedy and Sichuku and Iwan Kutalaba because good for them. But Jack Della Maddalena should have got the bump to the main event spot, in my opinion. That's how this card should have ended, with JDM going out there and doing the damn thing. He's the one we were all looking at anyways. Outside of just to see if Derek Lewis could get back on track, we were looking at this guy. We just wanted to see him go out in style and do his thing. This is picture-perfect matchmaking for the UFC. You accomplished everything you wanted to here, and now you're going to throw this man onto a pay-per-view card in front of a capacity crowd that's going to be all cheering for him in Perth against a top 20, 25-ish guy, maybe even higher. You accomplished everything. The only thing you could have done better is when you lost Derek Lewis, you just threw him in that spot, and that's how the card ended. And I think, not that we don't have a great, an okay feeling with Kennedy finishing the fight the way that he did and cutting that promo, but Jack Della going out there and just whooping on Danny Roberts, who's tough. He beat the hell out of Danny Roberts. That would have been a nice way to end this card and just give him as much of a rub as possible. But other than that, I got no complaints. This guy's the real deal, Jed Meshew. The silkiest hands at welterweight. I like that.
True. I got no real issues with that statement. Dude's got mitts. I don't know any part of the rest of his game because we have never seen it. He just does the same thing over and over, which is box everybody's ears in the first round. But that's good. We gave him enough of these fights. Let's give him somebody who's really going to test his mettle a little bit, and let's see what we got cooking with this boy.
Yeah, there's a lot of good matchups for him available, I think, right now. I don't think it should be the main event. I think from the get-go, this should have always been the co-main event, though, Jack Della. But yeah, which I guess
and
was this, I guess
the would have got the bump.
Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I think this should have been the co-main event for the Kennedy and Chikubu fight. Like, I think that is the right main event because I actually think Kennedy has like a potential future here. It's probably not as high as Jack Della's is. I think it's less volatile because light heavyweight sucks. So if I had to pick one of these two dudes that I like – can feel the most confident is going to be a going player in its weight class in 4 years, give me Kennedy because he's in a terrible weight division. Whereas Jack Della like could still be really good and just like be a top 25 dude because welterweight's guy hitters. So I think that the main event's right. Jack Della should have for sure been the co-main event once we shuffled the deck.
Let me ask you this. Who would you pick in a fight tomorrow, Jed? Kennedy and Sichuku or Dominic Reyes?
Kennedy.
You'd pick Kennedy to win? Would you do the same, Casey?
He trains with Ryan Spann. He knows how to do it now.
Last week, maybe not Kennedy, but off this performance, for sure, Kennedy. Yeah, okay. Now that we know what we've seen from Reyes, where he is at this time in his career. Yeah, that's a fight Mr. Reyes should be able. I'm sorry?
That's a really good way to phrase it. Because last week, I don't think I would have. Like, I think Ryan Spann is a better version in some ways of Kennedy. And so, like, but now that I've seen that fight, now I can feel confident. Whereas if I had not seen that, I'd be like, he should probably be Kennedy, right?
Yeah. All right. This was a talking point. The card. Well, actually, they didn't talk about it, but Miles John did. So let's just. What can we say about this? Oh no, wrong one. Sorry. There we go.
Do you think James Krause's suspension was about the Minner controversy? If yes, what do you think they learned in the investigation? If not, what is your guess?
It for sure was about the Minner. I'll talk about it. It for sure was about the Minner controversy, because why else would it exist? My guess is that they haven't actually learned shit, and this is more an optics thing than it is a real life concern. Because, like, why? I mean, if they have learned something, well, then that's going to be a real big story. But I've maintained the whole time that James Krause, I have a lot of issues with James Krause and touts in general and that, and we don't need to dive into that. I do not believe James Krause is stupid enough to, as the head coach of a fighter who is compromised, unload a bag on his opponent, because that's actually illegal, not just like breaking UFC rules. That is a thing that the government gets involved in, and you go to jail over. It's called fight fixing. So I am extremely confident that he is not stupid enough to have actually done anything illegal or untoward here. But it was always bad optics for him to be a tout and a head coach, and doing that, him being at a UFC event on the heels of this, that feels like this is an optics play more than it is something substantive.
Yeah. And that's probably the best way to describe it from what I've been told. It's just, it's not a great, basically it's not a, like a suspension. It's just like, hey, you should probably sit this one out until we finish this investigation. But from what I understand, Krause is not like a suspect or anything like that. It's not like that. But I mean, when
there's
this whole thing happened,
no way. He
was the first. Yeah. I like to live in a world where I believe that nobody is that dumb.
There's no way he is that dumb.
Yeah.
I've never met that man. There's no way he is that dumb, because he is literally the first suspect. The only person who would be stupider is if Derek Minner himself did it. And I cannot believe either of them actively did this.
Right.
What happened? So I think
you're saying that, but you're also saying these are also a coach and a fighter that went into a fight with one leg. Which is not very smart either.
They're different kinds of dumbs. I totally get what you're saying, but smart and dumb aren't like a linear thing, right? There are different variations of dumb, and every fighter is stupid. Every single one of them. And then every professional athlete is stupid, because to believe that you can be a professional athlete, you have to be a moron, because it's not real. It's not a real thing that you can be. You have to have an unbelievable amount of confidence to the point that it's insane. And fighters all believe they can win every fist fight, despite everyone knowing what they don't. So, like, that's a different kind of stupid that I can understand. There's no way they are dumb enough to not recognize, oh, if we do this, they're going to immediately figure it out. Like, there's just no way. The simplest answer is the right one. The simplest answer is somebody found out beforehand and it leaked. Somebody said something offhand to a buddy or whatever. It was like, oh, I don't like Derek. Like, Derek's really dealing with this knee or whatever. And then that buddy told five friends, who then all bet a bunch of money on it. Like, that's the simplest answer. It's what happened, almost assuredly.
I don't know enough about gambling, but like, say if I found out about Derek Minner, you know, whatever, I put $50 on his opponent, whatever. That doesn't move the line.
No.
How much money must be thrown on Minner? I don't know who Minner was even fighting. It's not even important right now. How much money must be thrown on his opponent to make that line move that much?
Well, it depends a little bit.
You're talking like $1,000, talking about like $100,000, talking about like $500. I don't know enough about that kind of how lines move enough.
It depends in general. As lines move based on exposure. So to some extent, it'll move based on how much exposure the book has to it. Also, I would guess, though I have no actual information on this, that they moved the lines as the bets kept coming in, that became more of a, there's a suspicious betting pattern. We are going to move the lines even further away as a result of this. But like, we're not talking hundreds. Thousands of dollars at the minimum got laid down here, if not tens.
Okay, so that's enough to kind of raise suspicions around the 10. I don't know very much about this part of the gambling world, so yeah. I'm kind of interested, honestly.
My guess is that like they got like 6 or 7 like 5-figure bets dropped on it within the span of an hour or something. Oh, okay. And we're like, because it to some extent it's if like 100 people put $100 on it, that's not going to raise that number is not going to raise any suspicion. But you get a few large sized wagers. And particularly it depends on like, I have no idea what books were the prominent thing here, but if you're doing like an online sports book and you get, like they track all this. So if you get some guy who creates an account who like doesn't have a DraftKings account or whatever, and then suddenly gets one, loads 10K up and fires it on one, like fires the whole bank account on one thing, it's a wildly suspicious betting pattern. And then that's sort of how this thing, in my mind, this how probably how that all worked or yeah, played a role.
And on top of that, from what it seems to be out there, people were putting money on like not only Nurnenbecker winning, but Nurnenbecker winning in round one.
Yeah,
like,
round one.
Was, oh, okay.
He didn't have any UFC finishes. No thing, finishes in the UFC. Yeah. So like there were a lot of like prop bets being hit too, like under rounds, first round finishes, things like that. So. A lot of flags.
Yeah.
What's the chances we ever see Derek Minner fight in the UFC again?
I would bet it's pretty low.
Pretty low, yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm not making an accusation. I would assume that he was not actively involved in this, frankly.
You have to assume that. Yeah.
But why keep him? Like is Derek Minner selling out the Apex? Nope. You just cut ties and move on from the potential problem.
All right. I think this is I don't know what the problem. There's a lot of problems, so I'm not sure which problem. I'm assuming the main event problem.
Has to be the end.
Sorry. Go on.
No, I mean they probably handled it as best they could. Because even before, probably like right after we ended the People's Pre-Fight Show, I started hearing rumblings that the main event might be off. I didn't have enough to like go in Slack, but I had enough to at least start asking people. And then I didn't get any answers from anybody. And then like the more time went on as the prelims are going on, the more it seemed like the rumors are true. But it wasn't enough for me to just go out there and be like, all right, it's off. Like it got to the point for us where we had already pre-wrote that the fight was canceled. So that as soon as they made the announcement, it's not like Damon's the fastest typer in the world. He's a super fast typer, but he couldn't write that whole article in 13 seconds. Cause as soon as the announcement was done, we already had something ready to go. We just couldn't officially confirm it with multiple people. So yeah, and I don't think the UFC truly knew as well, because the story seems to be is that Lewis was hospitalized, he got released, he thought he could still fight, they're trying to find a way for it to happen, and he just wasn't cleared to do so. And then they had to make the decision, and it's just a matter of, all right, when do we announce this, how do we announce this, and then how do we move forward? And they move forward by just bumping the co-main event to the main, and you carry on. What else can you do?
I think the UFC did what they could do for as far as the main event situation. But back to Krause real quick. Actually, my big issue is on this is that we would have never known, right? Unless Miles John mentioned it in the post fight interview. Like this one, because apparently it happened. Like he knew that he wasn't going to be in his corner like a couple of days out, right? This wasn't like right as he was walking out. So
no, I mean, he said it happened last night. So they're eating dinner last night. Last night. Okay. They found out. That's when they found out.
So I'm going to say why, like, if he didn't, I have no faith that the UFC, like Bisping or Fitzgerald, wouldn't have gone, okay, by the way, James Krause will not be in his corner tonight. They didn't mention that during the fight, right? At all.
They mentioned he wasn't in the corner. And they even showed, they went to his corner a couple times and Krause wasn't there.
Did they mention it? Like why he wasn't there?
They didn't say why he wasn't there. They just said he wasn't there. They said he wasn't not in his corner.
To me, that's actually the worst part of this. Because again, I don't think Krause did shit, right? This is whatever. It's not cool, is the way I'll phrase it, for the UFC to disallow a corner 24 hours in advance for something that they knew. Like,
yeah, it's
they could have easily called him a week ago and just been like, hey, James, this is happening. We're going to not, we would prefer you not do this. Please have your fighter make other arrangements or whatever to have a corner instead of, because I have no idea what went on in that when it's like, hey, your head coach and chief corner is not allowed. So now you got to find somebody in 24 hours. Like that, through no fault of his own, because like, let's, like, that's not his, this has nothing to do with him and his fault. And like, worked out, and that's good, but that could have super been shitty for him. And like, if he loses that and it's a close fight, there's a world where that is a direct result of the UFC just kind of dicking about here, and that's just trash, man.
To be fair, and this is kind of what I was alluding to earlier, Kevin Ioli, Yahoo Sports, wrote an article a little while ago. Miles was kind of misinformed. It wasn't the UFC who pulled him. According to Kevin, it was the commission who pulled him.
Oh, okay.
The commission. Yeah.
Well, that's a little better.
Yeah. The Nevada Athletic Commission would not allow veteran MMA coach James Krause to work the corner of Miles Johnson on Saturday on the preliminary card of UFC Vegas 65 against Vince Morales. I had reached out to the commission.
Honestly, that makes a lot more sense.
They declined to comment for me as well. Yeah. It wasn't a UFC decision. It seems that's a –
yeah. That makes a ton more sense, because part of the thing that I was thinking but didn't say, because I just – it went against my argument, and I was like, why bring up a thing that goes against my argument? When has the UFC ever been responsible about optics? Never. They suck at optics. They are terrible at that. And so it makes total sense that this is the – yeah, for sure the commission will do that. Will be like, yeah, that looks bad. We won't do that. It makes way more sense.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure this is not the last we will hear this story.
Probably.
No, even Miles said in his post-fight interview back in the back that you guys will probably hear more about this in a little bit, but it doesn't seem like it's like Jed said, from all That's accounts, from people I talk to, it's an optics thing more than anything. It's not like, hey, you're in trouble, you're suspended, pal. No, it's like,
and no one's getting in trouble for this.
Yeah. You should probably sit out for a couple weeks.
The independent investigation is just going to quietly peter off and nothing's going
to
happen.
Unless someone does something really stupid and all they have to do is print up a couple of bank accounts. And
yeah, I mean, there's a world. That would at least be funny. But No, it's just going to be like, yeah, nothing. We can't pin this on anybody. So there it goes. We're not getting a Calvin Ridley situation here. It's just not going to happen.
Back to the fights this afternoon. Let's talk about – oops.
How about that head kick that Silva landed in the first?
Where'd it go?
That was nasty, man. That was nasty. And I picked against Silva, not because I don't think she's a fun fighter, but because she was taking on a giant in that division. And I've kind of leaned on the picking side of I'm going to take the giant over most people. And someone who's that big and has that much of a reach advantage in a division like 125, I felt okay. And especially when you look at
the first 5 minutes, she should have felt great.
Yeah, she kept taking her down. She was able to hold her down. The second round, things got a little hairy. She started to get tired. She couldn't get the takedowns. Silva started piecing her up. And you kind of felt like that was coming. A finish was on the horizon. But did I see a spinning back kick to the face? No. I didn't see that. That was beautiful stuff.
Yeah, you and her opponent did not see it.
No.
Oh, and the follow-up was awesome.
So the follow-up was very good. This is a very stupid nitpick of mine, but it kind of like this isn't a head kick. It's a kick that landed on the head. Those are different. She did not throw this with the intention of landing a spinning kick to the head. Blade of literally ducked her head in like that thing.
She was shooting in, right? Went right when she threw the spin kick. Yeah.
But that spin kick was not a counter to the shot. The kick was thrown, blade a shot into the kick because that was not a wheel kick that went head height. That thing went to the hip. Blade's face was just by her hip. And so she got blasted from it. So it's very, very minute detail. But I want to clarify that.
Was that spin kick? Was that very similar to Uriah Hall versus Musasi one? I remember Musasi kind of lowered, changed levels, and right when Uriah did a spin, so he just happened to hit him right in the face. Yeah.
A little bit.
I was like, I've
seen
this.
It was also
before.
The high point of this card. The best thing in this card happened the first fight.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Salikov Fialho too, but that was still the coolest thing to happen this fight card.
Let's talk about that.
No bonuses yet, by the way.
They're just UFC's just not like whatever.
Andre Fialho has taken so much damage getting rocked this past year. I think he needs a year off or risks losing his chin. It looks like
he
is a one-trick pony. What do you think?
No, not one-trick.
Oh, here we go. We got bonuses. Breaking news.
Oh, wait. I wasn't ready.
We got bonuses.
Hit the music.
The fight of the night for UFC Vegas 65. None of them.
Ooh.
Four performance.
Wow, Casey,
bonus.
You were right with the four performance bonus call.
I got it.
Natalia Silva, Kennedy Inciuchukwu,
the four
JDM,
people who got finishes.
Muslim Salikov. There you go. There's your bonuses. No fight of the night.
Literally the four finishes. We just paid out. Just do that every time. Pay out finish bonuses, UFC. It's so much easier. So much better.
So much better.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Chandler for a minute. Yeah.
Unless you get Chandler Poirier, it should be all performance bonuses. Yeah.
No. It's dope because then Poirier gets one and Chandler doesn't. And it's dope. Support that. Big fan. Yeah.
What do you make of Seattle Ryan's take care about one trick pony, take a year off, risk losing the chin?
I think you should take time off in general because we talked about it on the pre-show. Yeah, he had four in 2021. This man has fought nine times in 2 years. That is a shitload, and you just shouldn't do it. I think fighting frequently is probably the best way to become a star, frankly, because the UFC doesn't invest in building stars, and if you're not naturally like wildly charismatic, you can just do the – like Hamzat's not very charismatic, but he fought a bunch in a very short period of time and delivered great performances, and so he's a star all of a sudden. Like that's how it worked. Fialho tried that and he didn't. He lost three of them this year. And it's just, I don't think the human body is built for this level of activity. And especially if you are a guy without a ton of defensive responsibility like Fialho, I think taking some time off would help him. I will also don't like his issue wasn't his chin today, man. The chin was not the problem. Like, that is not why he got beat. He ate – nobody talked about it, but the reason he threw like two punches in the second round, he had a spinning kick to the body in the second round that you could just tell he was done. Like his hands never left here after he ate it like very early in. And when the commentator's like, he's not throwing a lot. It's like, yeah, his guts are falling out of him right now. He is just trying not to show it. And it was the body work that did it. Sure, the finish was cool, but – Salikov just kept hitting him to the body, and he didn't want any part of that because that takes your will to live away.
Yeah, and like, I'm not even sure. Did Fialho even get truly dropped, or did he just eat everything? I felt like maybe he got dropped once.
He got dropped in the second.
He sort of sat down in the second.
Oh, yeah, I remember
like,
that. He's like,
he was against the fade, and he ate one to the body, or maybe it was a third, and he just like squat sat and then stood right back up, and I was like, dude, you are doing your friggin' best to hide this.
Yeah. Hey, and when the ref stopped it, he still gave one of those like, what the fuck? You know? Yeah. So,
he at least had the decency to not stick to that for very long.
Yeah.
He was like, no, I'm here. Yeah, actually, no, yeah. You're right. I didn't really want to do this anymore.
Man, but talk about like a guy, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword, two knockout bonuses, and then two other end of the knockout bonus. Two of his opponents got knockout bonuses. So
that's the perfect guy to employ in your fight organization.
Yeah. That's awesome. He needs
also mind-boggling to think that he fought Michel Pereira and that fight wasn't like the most fun, cool thing that anyone's ever watched.
Yeah, it was just a fight. Yeah.
Somehow, of all his UFC fights, that's the worst one of them. Doesn't make any sense.
Cool.
That fight went exactly the way I thought it was going to go, by the way. Just throwing that out there. Fialho was going to have a great first round, and then he was going to slow down and get I had him getting knocked out in the second. I was very, very close. That's not it. But I went to the third.
Oh, no.
Feel horrible for Zhumagulov. Yeah, man.
I blame him. Do better.
King of Kung Fu for a reason. Those body kicks, man. Those spin kicks to the body are just ferocious.
He's got that like Dennis Seaver quickness with it. Like it really, those pop up very fast.
Yeah, he's a Dennis Seaver.
And then after he landed a few to the body, he's like that one he landed that was like the second to last shot in the fight that he hit Fiala like right in the ear. You saw Fiala's life change in an instant. He just goes. It was just he was on a different planet. I was like, please stop this fight, please. And then Chris Tyone eventually stopped it.
Yeah. I just love that he's the only fighter I've ever seen throw spinning body kicks to set up spinning wheel kicks. Like, I go to the body with these spinning kicks, and the next time I spin, you'll be like, block low, and then whoop-bam, I go high.
Sucker. Yeah.
He is going next level MMA striking.
All right, I think this will be our last question, but I think this needs to be – might as well talk about this lady.
What do you do with Maya at this point? Just a gatekeeper? Does she have a title push left?
Where do we have Maya ranked right now? Let's pull up our rankings.
Top 10.
She has to be, right?
I have Maya at number 13.
We officially have Jennifer Maya at number 11. She dropped a spot with Blanchfield's win at 280, who Blanchfield moved into the top 10. Taking a spot from Maya, who bounced down to 11. But we also have Liz Carmouche and Juliana Velazquez. So if you're just looking at the UFC, she's firmly in the UFC's top 10. Yeah, she's just gatekeeper to good people, man. That's it. Like, she's not ever really going to get back to a title fight, probably, because she's lost to Chukagian twice, right?
Is it twice?
Yes.
Okay.
I know she lost recently, but I think she lost her. I think that was a rematch, if I'm not mistaken. And so I got Chikagian's the gatekeeper to the stars, and Maya can't beat the gatekeeper to the stars. So she's now the gatekeeper to the top 10. Like, that's if you beat her, you're a top 10 fighter. If you don't, you're not. And that's fine. She got her day in court, which is more than most people do. Yeah. She got the chance to do it. But yeah,
Chikagian's at top 5 gatekeeper. Maya's at top 10 gatekeeper. And problem with Jennifer Maya is, and I have watched, I've probably seen at least 10 Jennifer Maya fights, and I have a hard time remembering any of them, to be honest. And
they'll look a lot like that one, frankly.
Yeah. And there's nothing against her. She's a quality fighter, but she, you find out how good, we know who she is. It's basically to find out how good the other opponent is.
She's going to fight. Who's the gatekeeper to 15, though? If she's the top 10 gatekeeper, who's the 15?
Tisha Torres. Tisha Torres by a mile.
But Tisha Torres is strawweight.
You said 115.
No, the 15, not to 115. To the top 15. If we've got a 5 and a 10. But yeah, Tisha Torres is. Tisha Torres and Jennifer Maya are the same fighter, just 10 pounds different.
Probably Andrew Lee? Joanne Wood?
I think those are both in the neighborhood of right. That feels right. Yeah.
I think Roxy probably was.
Yeah, Roxy was Roxy definitely was before she bounced, yeah. So there's an opening for a new top 15-er.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, might be Maya.
Yeah,
Maya might end up dropping to 15. Lauren Murphy can hold that 10-er spot. Or maybe Murphy moves up to 5 and Chukagian drops down to 10 as she's picking up more tread.
Amaya's going to fight either Macy Barber or Tracy Cortez if she beats Amanda Hibas.
She might be Macy Barber. She might be Macy.
Maybe Tacey O'Neill. I don't know. Probably it's going to be one of those gals.
God love Macy Barber.
If she resigns, she has not resigned.
Gonna
be
the youngest champion. Okay.
Hey, she shot her shot. Yeah, I give her that.
I respect it. She came out there firing bullets. None of them were close to hitting.
Well, gentlemen, we've gone 45 minutes. So,
wow, way longer than I thought we were gonna go. So,
I'm gonna hit the music.
So there we go. We're done. I don't even know how we're gonna headline this. It's gonna take me longer to figure out how to headline this show.
Hold on.
Is this the worst card of the year?
No, I don't.
It's probably.
But like, not for the headline. It is the worst card of the year, right?
UFC.
Yeah.
I can't think of a worse UFC card this year. Think of it this way. If this event was like started at 5, how miserable would we all be right now? If it's 9 p.m. and they come onto the broadcast and are like, so Derek Lewis is out. We've got a new main event. I am just in tears.
Was it the Grasso Araujo card? That was pretty bad.
It was a tough hang.
The saving grace for this card was the time.
Yeah, the time made it. Yeah. The time made it all okay.
It might have been the Dern. I think it was the Dern versus John card.
Hey, before we get out of here, because we don't need to riff forever, keep it locked to MMAfighting.com, great website. We've got Bad Boxing coming your way tonight. And check it out tomorrow. I have a piece that's coming out that I'm really, really happy with. Comes out at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Get your on to the next one picks in as well. Good night, everybody.
Love you guys.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.